We're going to continue on by looking at parts of the Bible that we've had traditional understandings of, and you've probably heard the story talked about in a very specific way over and over again, where I kind of feel like there might be a different approach, not just me, but theologians that I read as well. So this is another one that's a little bit longer of a text, so we're just going to read the text. There won't be a second reading of this. This is one you're going to be very familiar with, like the other ones. This comes from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 25, verses 14 through 30. I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version, the updated edition of that. Hear now these words. For it is as if a man going on a journey summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. And at once the one who had received 5 talents went off and traded with them and made 5 more talents. And in the same way, the one who had 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, Master, you handed me over 2 talents. See, I have made 2 more talents. His master said to him, well done, good and trustworthy slave. You've been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Then the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward saying, Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, have what is yours. But his master replied, you wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So, take the talent from him and give it to the one with 10 talents, for to those, all those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance, but from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. May he add blessing and understanding to the reading of these words. Doug, we'll ask you for another song, sir.
Something happened here. What it is, things I feel here. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I've got to beware. Like how we stop children, what's that sound? Everybody, what's going on? Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds, getting so much resistance from behind. I think it's time we start. Children, what's that sound? Everybody, what's going on? What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the streets. Theme songs and a carrying signs. Mostly saying, who made for our sign? I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody, let's go. Bend the strikes deep. Into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, make it come along, and take you away. Things that stop, children, what's that now? Everybody, what's going on? That's up.
Thanks, Neil. I really appreciate that. My message this morning is entitled, What If the Wrong Person is the Hero? There are some stories in the Bible that are difficult because, well, we just don't understand them. And then there's stories that are difficult because we understand them all too well. At least we think we do. I believe that is what the parable of the talents is. It's one of those that we know all too well. Most of us have heard this interpretation of it our entire lives. A wealthy man leaves town. He gives money to three servants. Two invest it, double his money. One buries it in the ground, and the master returns. The first two are praised. The third is condemned. And the lesson that we're supposed to get from this, I guess, is, use your gifts. Don't waste your talents. Be productive for God. It is such a familiar interpretation that most of us don't even question that that's what the interpretation is meant to be. But there's this problem. Actually, there's several problems. But the biggest one is this. The story taken that way just doesn't sound very much like Jesus. I mean, think about it. Throughout the Gospels, Jesus repeatedly warns about wealth. He tells the rich young ruler to sell what he owns. He says, you can't serve God and wealth. He says, the first shall be last. He blesses the poor. He criticizes the elites. He warns against storing up treasures here on earth, and yet somehow, in this parable, we're expected to believe that Jesus suddenly becomes some kind of an investment banker? Honestly, it just feels a little off to me, Now, let's talk about talents. A talent wasn't a skill, obviously. It was money. But it was a huge amount of money. One talent was worth roughly 15 to 20 years of labor for the average worker in those days. 15 to 20. That's just one talent. The first servant receives 5 talents. The second receives 2. The third receives 1. Those are staggering amounts of wealth that they are presented with. This isn't a story about someone learning to, sing in the choir. This is a story about massive concentrations of money. And here's something else that's worth noticing. How did the wealthy landowner typically in those days increase his wealth? Well, it wasn't through innovation, wasn't through entrepreneurship, not through creating more jobs. They increased their wealth through systems that extracted resources, of course, from the poor people. large estates grew while peasants lost land. The rich became richer, poor became poorer. That was the sort of economic reality of Jesus' world, okay? Now, liberation theologians like William Herzog have suggested something fascinating about this story. What if we have misidentified the hero? What if the third servant isn't the villain of this story? What if he's the only one who refuses to participate? Let's look at it again. The first servant doubles the money. The second servant doubles the money. The third servant buries it. And when the master returns, the third servant says something remarkable. I knew you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you did not scatter seed. Now, most sermons read that as an accusation that turns out to be false. But what if it's true? What if it's true? What if the servant is accurately describing the master? After all, reaping where you did not sow sounds a lot like exploitation. Gathering where you did not scatter seed sounds a lot like taking what others have produced. In other words, the serpent is directly naming the system that he's protesting. He says out loud what everyone else is pretending not to notice. The wealth isn't neutral. The master isn't benevolent. The system isn't fair. And then the servant does something actually incredibly interesting. He refuses to play. He doesn't steal the money. He doesn't spend the money. He says, just gives it back. Exactly as he received it. No profit, no exploitation, no participation. Just straight up refusal. And for that, he gets condemned. Now, before we go too far, I should say, scholars do disagree on this particular interpretation. Many pretty good scholars still hold that more traditional reading of it. But what makes this interpretation so compelling for me is how well it fits the larger ministry of Jesus. Because Jesus consistently sides with people who refuse oppressive systems. He constantly challenges concentrations of wealth. He consistently stands with those who bear the cost of economic injustice. And maybe that's why this particular interpretation that I'm sharing has resonated so strongly with liberation theologians. Because they ask a question that many were never taught to ask. Who benefits from the way things are? And who pays the price? Okay. Well, at that moment, I'm going to ask you to turn to somebody and talk about this one question, maybe a minute each. Can you think of a time when doing something that was considered successful and doing the right thing felt like they were two different things? Time in your life where you saw somewhere where doing the successful thing and doing the right thing felt like two very different things. Take a couple minutes each, and I'll give you a heads up when we get close.
What do you
think of
that? That's all right.
Yeah, here we are.
That's the first business, the thing about switching people.
So I've always
wrapping it up. We got about 15 seconds. You're putting we'll continue on. So, you know, one of the most powerful things about this story is that it challenges a myth that many of us over our lives have sort of absorbed. The myth that success automatically equals goodness. See, our culture loves productivity. We admire growth. We celebrate expansion. More profits, more followers, more influence, more possessions, more. And often we assume that if something is growing, well, it must be good. But, you know, but Jesus frequently asked a very different question. Not, does it work? Not, does it succeed? Not, does it make money? But, who does this help? And, who does it hurt? Now, those are very different questions. A system can be wildly successful and deeply harmful. A company can be profitable and unjust at the same time. A church can be growing and still misacting out the teachings of Jesus. A nation can be powerful and still fail its most vulnerable citizens. Success and faithfulness are definitely not always the same thing. The third servant, I would argue, seems to understand that. And perhaps that's why he is willing to bear the consequences of resistance. Because, as we know, resistance frequently comes with a cost. The people who challenged segregation paid cost. The people who fought for women's rights paid a cost. The people who stood with workers and immigrants and LGBTQ plus people paid a cost. The people who challenged empire in Jesus' day paid a cost. The world usually rewards compliance before it rewards courage. And yet history often remembers the courageous. Not because they won immediately, but because they revealed a deeper truth. Now, here's where this story starts getting a little uncomfortable for some folks, because it isn't just about ancient economics. It is about us. It truly is. It's about the moments when we recognize systems that exclude people, systems that devalue people, systems that tell some people that they matter less. And then we have a choice. Participate, remain silent, or risk speaking the truth. Now, the third servant speaks the truth, and it costs me. That's not really an easy lesson, I would say, but Jesus, well, Jesus rarely offers us any easy lessons. He offers transformative ones. I think that's why this parable is so provocative. It asks us whether we are willing to measure our lives by something larger than success. You know, by compassion, by justice, by solidarity, by love. Not because those things always win, and not because those things always make us popular, but because those things create the kind of world Jesus spent his life imagining. A world where people matter more than profits, where dignity matters more than status, where faithfulness matters more than productivity, where courage matters more than compliance. And, you know, perhaps that's the real question the story leaves us with. Not how can I multiply my talents, but maybe what am I helping to multiply? Am I multiplying compassion? Am I multiplying justice? Am I multiplying dignity? Am I multiplying welcome? Or am I multiplying systems that leave some people behind? Because in the end, the gospel is not primarily about maximizing returns. I think we all can see that. It's about maximizing love. And if this reading of this parable is even partially right, I think it is, then the scandal of it is not that one servant failed. The scandal is that one servant refused to participate in a system that everyone else was just accepting as normal. And that, you ask me, that sounds a lot like Jesus. Over and over again, refusing to accept what everyone else called normal, refusing to accept exclusion, refusing to accept exploitation, refusing to accept that some people mattered less than others. The question for us is the same one it always has been. When we encounter systems that diminish human dignity, what will we do? Will we participate? Will we remain silent? Or will we risk becoming the servant who tells the truth? Because sometimes faithfulness looks a lot less like success than we've been taught in our lives. Sometimes the hero of the story is the one standing alone, refusing to even play that game. And if that's true, then maybe the point of this parable isn't learning how to grow wealth, how to grow talents. Maybe it's learning how to grow courage. And maybe, just maybe, that's the talent the world needs now more than ever before.
Finish school and make rent. Got a job all my time with. Pay the bills. Still I felt I should be doing something else. Even got married to college too. Always had someone there tell me what to do. Working hard, but it was hard to tell. Would there be time for something else? Job turned sour. I walked away. knew that soon there would come a day to do what I should have been doing all along. Could pick a bit and sing my song. I moved on, friends and lovers did the same. Soon I had nowhere to place the blame. Took a look inside myself and asked myself, not now, when? So here I sit, a better man, bringing forth all the music that I can. Now you go ahead and ring the factory bell. Yeah, I'll be here doing something else. Yes, I'd rather be doing something else.
As always, thank you, Doug. It was beautiful. Let's bow our heads, Stephen. Sometimes it is difficult to know what faithfulness looks like. The world is constantly teaching us to measure our lives by growth, achievement, success, influence, accumulation. But if we are honest, those lessons can be hard to ignore. We like to believe that bigger is better, that more is more, that success is proof that we are headed in the right direction. Yet the stories of Jesus keep inviting us to ask different questions. Not what did we gain, but who benefited. Not what did we accomplish, but who was lifted up. Not did we win, but did we love. We recognize that there are times when we participate in things simply because everyone else does. Times when we stop asking questions. Times when we assume that what is common must also be right. Times when we trade courage for comfort. May we learn to see more clearly. May we learn to notice those places where human dignity is treated as less important than profit, power, prestige, and popularity. May we learn to recognize the moments when silence feels safer than truth. May we remember that throughout history, the people who helped create a better world were often those who refused to accept that the way things were was the way things had to be. May we encourage one another to live more courageously. May we inspire one another to ask difficult questions. May we support one another when choosing love comes at a cost. And may we never forget that the measure of a life is not found in what we accumulate, but in what we cultivate: compassion, justice, hope, community, love. May these things be the things that multiply throughout our lives. And in doing so, may we help create a world where more people flourish, more people belong, and more people know their sacred worth. Amen.
Amen.
Sing the blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may your words and your actions share that love and happiness with all of those you meet. Done.
May God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build the ladder to the stars and climb on every rung, and may you stay. Forever young. Forever young. Forever young. May you stay. Forever. May you grow up to be righteous. May you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the lights surrounding you. May you always be courageous. Stand upright and be strong. And may you stay. Forever. Forever young. May your hands always be busy. May your feet always be swift. May you have a strong foundation when the winds of change shift. May your heart always be joyful. May your song always be sung. And may you sing forever young. Forever young. May you stay forever.